Good morning, everybody. To confuse things even further, it is indeed not Monday. It's Tuesday. And I have to keep remembering that. I was watching the Oscars and tweeting and Facebooking and then falling asleep by midnight. I'm a party animal these days, Dan. You can't stop me. anyway, so we're going to talk Oscars throughout the show. I was not on. I want to thank Brian Noonan for sitting in during the show yesterday, and that was cool. But it is not Monday, but we're going to do the Monday morning movie reviews here on a special edition on Tuesday. And then later you're going to get even more confused because my dad's going to tell a joke. So it seems like a Monday to me, so I'm just going to confuse everybody. I will be probably reminded throughout the show by myself and by Dan that it is indeed a Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. Let's do two for Tuesday. All right. Anyway, we are going to – now, Eric is not able to join us this week. He couldn't because it's not Monday, because it's not Monday, it's Tuesday. So he was not able to join us. Colin, who has been taking a few weeks off, is also not here. But Jim Leskowski, who has been filling in for Colin and doing a superb job for the past couple of months, is indeed going to join me this morning. And I believe this might be Jim's last appearance with us, because Colin is going to be coming back next Monday on the 7th. So, yeah. So let's get to it. We got some movies to review. We're going to talk box office. Eric did indeed write a box office report, and we'll go down that, and we'll check out the new movies, and, of course, we'll talk about the Academy Awards a little bit, and we want to get Jim in here right now. Jim, welcome.
Hello there, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right. So, first of all, thank you so much. This, I believe, will be your last regular appearance on the show for a while.
Terrific. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it's been an honor. Big shoes to fill with Colin and all, but I'm glad he took some time off, some much-needed time off.
Yeah, he took a little break. He wanted to do some other things and, concentrate a little bit more on work and get into the groove. And, of course, you know, he picked January and February, the two worst months for film releases. and of course, the week that he comes back, Jim... a new Terrence Malick movie comes out. So that's, you know, I don't know if the timing was specific.
Does that open on Friday?
It opens Friday, yeah. Knight of Cups opens on Friday.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
I wonder if he timed that.
My guess is yes. That would be my guess. next week we've got Zootopia, which is sort of the first big animated movie of the year. That's coming out next week. London Has Fallen, let another Gerard Butler movie. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, the new Tina Fey comedy, and then a horror movie called The Other Side of the Door. But so Knight of Cups is the new Terrence Malick movie with, of course, 7 million stars in it. Because everybody wants to work with Malick. So that's for next week, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. But we did have some movies come out this week. Now, I did mention Gerard Butler. Now, Jim, neither you nor I had a chance to see Gods of Egypt.
No.
Although, because I've seen the trailers and commercials, I have a feeling I've already seen it.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
It is a monumental bomb. It made $14 million over the weekend, and it cost $145 million to make. So
poor Alex Proyas.
Yeah. Well, I've never been a fan. I got to tell you. I know that there's a lot of supporters of The Crow and Dark City. I'm just not... I'm not that guy. I don't know. But anyway, Gods of Egypt was the big special effects, Gods of Egypt action extravaganza, which looked like a really bad CGI version of the Sinbad movies from the 70s.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what it looked like to me. I haven't seen it, so we're going to skip that one. But there were two other big ones that opened up this week that we're going to take care of. But before we do that, let's talk about the Academy Awards real quick. I'm going to talk more about it as the show goes on, Jim, after our segment together. Overall, what did you think of the show, and what did you think of the winners?
Well, like most years, I did grow a little restless in the second half of the show. However, I have to admit that I laughed way more than recent telecasts. Mm-hmm. I found a lot of the jokes and routines kind of landed more often than crashed. And, I mean, I owe a lot of that to Chris Rock. He did a really brilliant job as host. I was consistently impressed, and I thought some of the things he said was jaw-dropping at times.
Yeah.
I thought he handled the Oscars so white controversy wonderfully, in a way that I think, you know, Richard Pryor would have if he were to have hosted back in the heyday. I mean, I know some people have come out to say, like, oh, it was overkill, or maybe he boomeranged back to the issue a bit too much. But, hey, I enjoyed it. I found the sketches particularly funny, seeing Tracy Morgan as the Danish girl.
Right, and
the whole Martian sketch with Kristen Wiig and Jeff Daniels was fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's not something I normally, you know, think of when I watch the Oscars. Is like, those sketches were great, and I laughed a lot, you know? So, I mean, in that regard, I mean, I thought this was one of the better telecasts in a while. So I'm giving it kind of a thumbs up for once, and usually it kind of bores me, you know, bores me to tears. I mean, you know, overall with the winners and everything, a lot of my predictions were kind of accurate. To where, you know, like I said, in the second half, I was just kind of like, that person won. I knew it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were some surprises, obviously,
that
I'm sure you're going to expand on later, too.
Yeah, we are. I'm going to get to that in a little bit. I thought Chris Rock did great, but I thought I'm one of those people that thought he went to the well one too many times.
I can understand that.
And I thought I don't think anything that he did outside of the monologue was as strong as that monologue. I thought the monologue was great. Some of the jokes in the monologue were just hilarious. And addressed the issue very well. I wasn't real sure about the Girl Scout cookie thing. It reminded me too much of Ellen ordering pizza for everybody. That was a little, you know, I mean, that seemed a little derivative to me. There were moments. I mean, I'll tell you what, watching Christian Bale shoveling Thin Mints into his face was pretty fun. I do have to say that. I'm a Thin Mint guy when it comes to the Girl Scout cookies. I wanted to see who was getting Thin Mints and I was very, very pleased to see that a lot of Hollywood people enjoy the Thin Mints.
Sure.
Yeah.
I thought
especially Christian Bale.
Stacey Dash bit fell flat.
Well, it did, but I didn't know what the bit really was. I mean, I thought, I don't know. And who made that call? Who called Stacey Dash's people and said, hey, we got this great idea to humiliate her in front of 80 million people? I have to say, it might not have worked, but I got to say, that was a ballsy move, man. I mean, it was a stunning moment, I think. And I don't know if it worked as a joke, but the mere fact that she came out there and did that, I was like, whoa, okay, all right. So
yeah, it wasn't like, you know, somebody played her like the Suge Knight.
When he said bit. Exactly like the Suge Knight, well, yeah, but exactly. But when he said Stacey Dash, I thought it was going to be like somebody acting like, or maybe Tracy Morgan in drag or something along those lines. And then it was her, and I was like, oh. And I think everybody in the room was stunned. I just, because the reaction was not, there was kind of no, it was a very uncomfortable moment when she came out there, did the bit, and people, I think people were still just kind of looking at each other going, what the hell just happened? That was certainly that was my response. I am thrilled that the movie that won the most Oscars on Sunday night is, of course, Mad Max.
Yes, well deserved.
There was a time while I was watching it after Mad Max had won like its 6 Oscars, and it just kept winning. You know, they were all tech Oscars, but it kept winning Oscars over and over and over again. And I was thinking to myself, boy, I'll tell you something, this orchestra is going to be really tired because they have to play over and over again. The string section is going to be mad that this thing keeps winning. But I actually kind of hypnotized myself into thinking that George Miller was going to win because it kept winning.
Yeah, I did too. I really wanted that to happen.
I did
so
too.
Bad.
I was like, yeah, Miller's going to win it, damn it. And then they announced Iñárritu, and I went, oh, okay, that's okay.
Yeah, it's like the really great run of, you know, winning production design and then makeup and film editing and sound editing and sound mixing was just great. Like, it all happened in a row. And then when special effects came around, I was like, oh, wow, Ex Machina.
Yeah. No, that was the.
I was talking
to Dan on the way in this morning, tonight, and I said, for me, that was the biggest upset of the night. Was when Ex Machina won visual effects over Star Wars. I was like, what the hell? And I was happy, too, you know, because Ex Machina is terrific and the effects were great. But I never saw that one coming at all.
Nobody did. Nobody did.
All right. Well, overall, I think you like the program more than I did. We'll get into it a little bit more details. We'll go through the winners. We actually have some audio and stuff to play later. Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, Jim and I are going to review the two movies that came out this week, and we'll talk a little box office as well. It's Tuesday. It is Tuesday. Don't mean to confuse everybody. It's Tuesday morning, and we're doing the Tuesday morning movie reviews, and they're coming up right after we take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here. It's Tuesday. I know that, but I was off on Monday morning when we do the Monday morning movie reviews, so we're doing them on Tuesday. Eric, because it is Tuesday, was not able to join us this morning, but Jim Leskowski, who's been filling in for Colin Suter, is here, and Jim and I are going to talk about two of the movies that were released. Neither of us saw Gods of Egypt, and I'm guessing that many of you who are hearing this right now also didn't see Gods of Egypt. But we're going to review the two movies, and we'll talk a little box office as well. And then later in the show, we'll go back and talk about the Academy Awards and pay tribute to a great, great, legendary character actor. The great George Kennedy passed away over the weekend, and we're going to pay honor to George Kennedy as well. How about that, Jim? George Kennedy passed away.
That's such a bummer.
91, he had a good run. 91.
Yeah, of course.
And so many great performances. I know this is, I'm a weirdo, but the first thing that popped into my head was, of course, Modern Romance, You Know Nothing, which is...
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah,
that whole sequence is brilliant with James L. Brooks.
It's amazing. I believe I know the code. You know nothing! That was the first thing. Just like when Meadowlark Lemon passed away a few months ago, I immediately thought of him in Modern Romance as well. So
I think the first thing I thought of was the Hulk.
Yes.
When he's running.
Yeah, Hulk.
When they're doing the sound.
No, that effect should be Hulk screaming. Not Hulk running. Unbelievable. Okay, well George Kennedy was, obviously won an Academy Award for Cool Hand Luke, made a name for himself in the 70s disaster movies, and, of course, everybody remembers him from the Naked Gun movies as well. So we'll talk more George Kennedy coming up a little bit later on. My dad's going to tell a joke, despite the fact that it is Tuesday. Jim, before we jump into the movie reviews, tell everybody about your podcast network and what's the latest with that.
Oh, yeah. So the recently launched Now Playing Network hosts a variety of pop culture-centric podcasts from guest contributors to your show in the past, particularly Eric Childress, Jim Hankey, and myself. Mm-hmm. And it's only getting better with new episodes pretty much every week from Eric. Most recently, he interviewed Brian Tallarico to talk all things Oscars for his podcast, Movie Madness. And then Jim Hankey interviewed a pair of musician friends and had a great talk about vinyl for Vinyl Emergency. And for my podcast, Director's Club, I also employed the help of Brian Tallarico and my buddy Al to talk about the legendary Sidney Lumet. And we tried to fit in as many masterpieces of his as we could.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
I bet it was.
All over at nowplayingnetwork.net.
Okay, nowplayingnetwork.net. Check out all of those podcasts there. You should do yourself a favor because these guys are all great. Nowplayingnetwork.net. And we're going to figure out a date for me to be on your podcast. And I know that Jim and I, Hankey and I, have already discussed me doing his show as well.
So, nice.
Yeah, his podcast as well. So
it'll be a treat.
It'll be fun. All right, let's get going here. Jim, tell us about Eddie the Eagle. And I have to say this beforehand. I really was hoping that this movie would be about former Blackhawks goalie Ed Belfour, but it isn't. All of you Hawks fans and Ed Belfour fans out there, the title may be misleading because it's not about Eddie Belfour. Let me tell all the Blackhawks fans about that. But go ahead, Jim. Tell everybody what this is.
I'm just glad that they didn't use the Steve Miller song "Fly Like an Eagle" at any point. Thankfully, in this film, Taron Egerton plays a real-life ambitious underdog by the name of Michael Edwards, whose sole mission in life was to make it into the Olympics. But, Egerton's character has more than his fair share of obstacles to overcome from the very beginning. His family and pretty much his whole country seemed to be against him, but Eddie refused to take no for an answer. Along the way, he decides that ski jumping would be the sport to bring him to the Olympic circle and help him achieve his dream. It just so happens that this is one of the most dangerous winter sports in the world. So Eddie heads off to train and prepare after finding a loophole that can get him one step closer to his dream. Along the way, Eddie comes across Bronson Perry, played by Hugh Jackman, a former champion of the ski jump. And with that, with much convincing and stalking of sorts, Perry becomes Eddie's coach, helping him make the requirements needed to participate in the 1988 Olympics in Calgary, Canada. So yeah, Eddie the Eagle, like I mentioned, is an underdog movie with its heart in the right place. And if you've seen the trailer, you can pretty much guess how the story plays out. It's a very simple movie that, you know, if you're in the mood for something predictable but very entertaining, it's there. And I got to say that at least the two leads here do their best, and they're very likable. But there's also very little attempt here by the director and screenwriters to dig a little deeper and find out what makes them tick. You know, in terms of the underdog sports movie, it does not, you know, rival the work of, you know, something like The Rookie or Miracle when I think of movies that really inspire me and I really gravitate towards. This one is just okay overall, but, I mean, Hugh Jackman's good, as always, but I just wish Eddie's story had a lot more depth to it. It just is what it is. It clocks in at a brisk 100 minutes, so it's not a movie that I felt restless during, and I can't imagine anyone actively disliking it, but it's not strikingly original or anything. If you see the trailer and you smile, you can see this movie, and you'll definitely smile and have a good time, even if I just found it to be very, very average.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on this one, Jim, all the way. It's a likable movie, and it is, yeah. And it just fills that gap, if there is a gap, in the underdog story. It's entertaining. It's very by the numbers. It follows, and I know it's based on a true story. It's based on a real guy. Now, from what I understand, though, much like Rudy. This guy that this movie is based on was not well liked, like in real life. Like, because Rudy was in real life, Rudy was a jerk. Like, they make you know they cast Samwise in the role and everybody loves him, and you know, but in real life, man, Rudy was not well liked by his teammates or the people that he went to school with. But in the same, what I've read and what I've heard, the same holds true for this guy. A lot of people were just annoyed by this guy and did not like him. But they, you know, they make him really lovable in the movie, as they have to. You got to root for him. Hugh Jackman, sure, is just, I love Hugh Jackman. You know, I just think Hugh Jackman is one of the most talented, all around talented entertainers in the world today. The guy can do anything. He can play serious drama. You know, like, if you just take a look at Prisoners, for God's sake, and, you know, obviously, he can do comedy. He can do light stuff. He can do romantic stuff. The man can sing. The man can dance. I think he is one of the most rounded, well-rounded, and extraordinarily talented entertainers around. And I really like to watch him. And he's a lot of fun to watch in this. He's having a really good time.
Yeah, definitely.
Taron Egerton, this is a bit of a departure for him, considering, like, the main roles that this guy has had in the past have all been sort of tough guy,
mm-hmm,
you know, gangsterish kind of roles.
He's very arrogant in Kingsman.
He's in Kingsman, and which is, you know, and he's going to be in the sequel to that, which I'm amazed that there's going to be a sequel to that movie. But I actually really like that movie. So he's in the Kingsman. He was in Legend with Tom Hardy, in which he played a crazed gangster guy. And it was very, and I didn't even recognize him, you know, because I didn't remember the guy's name, really. Taron Egerton. You know, I saw Kingsman, and I remember him from that, and I remember that he was in Legend, but I didn't put two and two together until I was like, oh, wait a minute, this guy. So this is a real departure for him in terms of the kind of stuff that he normally plays. He's
sure,
certainly not a tough guy, as far from a tough guy as you can possibly get. there were certain things in the movie that reminded me of there were certain elements of the movie in terms of production design and stuff that reminded me of the or the early part of the film reminded me of The Commitments.
Okay.
And,
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and a much better movie than this one, but it had that kind of feel to it. And so, you know, look, two really fun performances from the leads, a stretch for this guy Taron Egerton, who I think is, you know, I think is actually quite a good actor. If you are in the mood for a predictable by the numbers but entertaining movie about an underdog, sports underdog based on a true life story, you could do a lot worse than this movie. And I think that the crowd that I saw it with seemed to really enjoy it. There's nothing offensive in it. You can bring your family to it. It's one of those movies that you know what you're going to get when you walk in. And if you want to see like the underdog, you know, inspiring story, then this you could do a lot worse than this. And it's actually I'm pretty much recommending it for people. You know, because look, here's the deal. As you said, Jim, if you've seen the trailer for this movie, you've seen the commercial for this movie, you know exactly what's in store for you.
Right.
And either you
like... I have a soft spot for the sports underdog movie.
Me too.
So.
Absolutely. And the two that you mentioned, The Rookie and Miracle, are two of the best.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Rudy, and of course, obviously, the blueprint to all of them is Rocky. And, you know, this movie does fill that category very, very well, I think. And I think a lot of people are going to enjoy this movie. It's one of those movies that's just like, it's a very nice... pleasant crowd pleaser. So, all right.
Definitely.
Okay, Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay.
We got one more movie to review called 999, and then we've got the box office to talk about as well. Jim Liskowski, who is filling in for Colin Suter, and we thank him for that. Colin will be back on Monday, next Monday. And Eric couldn't join us because it is Tuesday and not Monday, so don't get as confused as I am. Nobody wants to be as confused as I am. But we'll take a quick break. We come back. We got one more movie to talk about, and then we'll get into the box office. I'll wrap up what I thought of the Oscars, and we'll also pay tribute to George Kennedy on this Tuesday morning. Yes, it is Tuesday. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich shows up for the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 this morning. Yeah, it's the Monday morning movie review themes that you hear, but I was off on Monday. I was off yesterday. Took it off for the national holiday known as the Academy Awards. And back this morning, so we're doing the movie reviews on a Tuesday morning. My dad will be calling in to tell a joke since I was off. And so you guys are going to think it's Monday for a little while, but it's not. It's Tuesday. And Jim Liskowski is with me, and we are reviewing the new movies. And, okay, welcome back, Jim.
Hello again.
All right, tell us about 999.
This is the latest film from director John Hillcoat, whose first two films I really liked quite a bit. Here, a group of bank robbers are running really high on their latest heist and feel as if they're finally ready to settle up and kick back, relax, and enjoy all of their riches. However, that's all short-lived once the ruthless and notorious gangster, played by Kate Winslet of all people, orders her men to pull off another job, the one they keep calling the last job. I'm sure we've all heard that before. So none of the gang are especially happy about this. They see this as their only way out, so they devise a few plans on how to steal another huge amount of cash. Eventually, they have a $1 million idea. The only issue is it involves cops. But this isn't much of a problem, considering that two of the members in the group, played by Anthony Mackie and Clifton Collins Jr., actually happen to both be cops. So to make their plan even more difficult than before, they get saddled with Chris Allen, played by Casey Affleck, who is a by-the-books cop, who is now, you know, pretty much playing on the straight and narrow. So will these crazy bad guys be able to get their heist all together despite all the obstacles standing in their way? Well, you can guess that things probably go awry. So first things first, I thought the opening heist was incredibly well done and gave me sort of that visceral punch that the first set piece in the movie Narc gave me.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I don't know, it really became kind of a derivative, heavy-handed aping of Michael Mann and Sidney Lumet, in which, like, you know, corrupt cops and gangsters interact and get incredibly nasty and violent. And I don't know, I zoned out. I became uninvolved. It really just wore out its welcome. Every character felt like an archetype, particularly Aaron Paul. Every situation that they're thrown into when it's not predictable has been done before. There's really no message at the end of the day to make it interesting in the way that Lumet and Michael Mann's earlier films were interesting. I mean, Woody Harrelson does the best he can with limited screen time, but I just didn't enjoy this movie because it wound up too wrapped up in its plot and expository dialogue that really wasn't well written, and just has this brooding, nasty tone that didn't sit well with me. By the time we got to the climax, like I said, I completely tuned out. I really don't think this is worth your time, even if I don't think it's god awful. But that's really just because of the ensemble cast and the opening sequence. That's probably the only saving graces for it. But it's really a waste of your time.
Wow.
Overall.
All right. Here's the thing. I do want to mention that Eric hates this movie. He's not here this morning, but I know he hates it because he texted me after he saw it. He knows that I was excited about it because I like Hill Coates movies. This cast is insane. It's just insane, the people that are in this movie. So I was really looking forward to it, and he texted me a very simple, very straightforward text after the screening of it that he saw, and it was a 999 is poo, but he didn't use the word poo. So I just wanted to say, so that Jim, you didn't like it, Eric didn't like it, I liked it. I completely understand why somebody wouldn't like this movie. But it's trashy. There's just no question about it. This is a trashy film. And I like Hill Coates' style. I do. There was stuff in he's got this really unapologetically dark and brutal style. It's appropriate.
Yeah, very gritty.
It was appropriate for The Road, obviously. And, you know, he also directed a really terrific movie called The Proposition, which is a great film. And I actually like Lawless to a certain degree. I know that they took that movie away from him and re-edited it, but I like the brutality of that movie, and I like the brutality of this movie. I thought everybody in this movie was having a blast. Particularly Woody Harrelson. I don't know what his character is doing. He's like... What is he? He smokes crack at one point.
Yeah.
He's doing blow. He's loaded with a gun, trying to shoot people in a bar or trying to get people to pull their guns in a bar. But
constantly dripping with sweat.
Constantly. And this movie is you remember that episode of Cheers years ago when they talked about the sweatiest movies of all time when they were in the bar?
Yeah.
And then very funnily somebody mentions Body Heat, which Ted Danson is in. It was one of my favorite sort of meta before meta was a joke thing. But, I mean, this cast is insane, and they seem to be having a really great time. There are a lot of good performances in this movie. I think Kate Winslet is awesome and crazy in this movie. I don't know what's going on with the wardrobe or the hair or the accent, but I liked it. Norman Reedus is a badass. He's in it too short of a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Omar shows up in drag. I'm going to have nightmares for the rest of my life. I'm like, what the heck? Is that Omar in drag? And that was a little weird. One of my favorite actors ever that nobody knows, Clifton Collins Jr., has a really juicy role in this movie.
Sure.
Is it plot heavy? Yeah. Is it believable? Not one lick. Not 1 minute of this movie is remotely believable. But I like the style of it. You talk about the opening heist thing. I thought that was great. I thought what was happening between the two, when they have to pull the 999 and get the cops away from them, and intercutting that heist part with, what was happening in the projects with Casey Affleck and everything. I thought that was well done. I could totally understand why people wouldn't like this movie, but I, for some crazy reason, I liked it and I'm recommending it. So.
I'm just indifferent to it. I didn't hate it.
Okay.
But I'm kind of blaming the fact that I just binge-watched so many Sidney Lumet films.
I can understand that. That's a very odd timing. I can understand that.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, hang on, okay?
All right.
All right, Jim Laskowski is with us, and I like 999. Sorry. And we'll take a quick break. When we come back after the news, we'll talk about the box office right here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Welcome back, everybody. And we're going to be talking about the Academy Awards. I was not on yesterday morning, Monday, so to do the wrap-up of the Academy Awards. We'll talk about the awards. We'll play some audio back and get your thoughts on it at 312-981-7200. I want to thank Brian Noonan for sitting in for me yesterday morning. And we will pay tribute to the great George Kennedy, who passed away over the weekend. Or yesterday, I should say. He passed away on Monday. See, I don't even know what day it is. So we'll pay tribute to George Kennedy. My dad, the great Nick, is going to call in and tell a joke because we were off yesterday. But right now, Jim Laskowski and I have just reviewed the two movies. Boy, both of which I recommended. I don't know what's going on with me, Jim. I guess I was in a good mood this week. But yeah, Eddie, and they couldn't be more different.
No kidding.
Eddie the Eagle, which is this based on a true story about this ski jumper who went to the 88 Olympics. It's a nice, uplifting sort of family underdog movie. And then a very dark, very nasty, very trashy heist movie with an incredible cast called Triple Nine that Jim did not like very much, and I did. And
they're pretty much neck and neck at the box office, weren't they?
Box office mojo. Yes, they were. Very, very close. Let me take a look at what we got here. Eric Childress, who joins us, he couldn't join us because today is Tuesday, not Monday. He couldn't join us this morning. But he did do a box office report, and he always breaks it down and talks quite a little bit about it. And let me read a little bit about what Eric wrote here underneath his headline of the big stories. Where there is a hit, there must be a bomb. Pretty much every other film released this year besides Deadpool is currently on the red side of the ledger. Kung Fu Panda 3 should hit the black in the coming weeks, and The Witch is basically there. But the only serious loser so far has been Disney's The Finest Hours, with its $75 million budget and less than $40 million grossed worldwide, which is too bad because that was actually a solid movie.
Yeah, that was all right.
Yeah, I liked it. I actually liked it. Good old-fashioned adventure. But it looks like Lionsgate Summit's Gods of Egypt is poised to take the lead in the loser race of 2016 unless the overseas markets want to see more of Gerard Butler in sandals than Americans do. Gods of Egypt is the second highest budgeted film of the year at over $140 million behind Kung Fu Panda 3. Lionsgate is reportedly responsible for a little more than a third of that, putting them on the hook primarily for the U.S. gross for the film, which does not look promising. The opening in between the $13 and $14 million realm puts its majority of the film at the $35 million mark, and you can break it down further with a B-minus cinema score and a Rotten Tomatoes score of only 13%.
Oh, my Lord.
So that puts it in the company of these February movies since 2003. Now, listen to this list of movies that it is. When a Stranger Calls, Fool's Gold, The Roommate, The Number 23.
Oh, wow.
Because I Said So, Rollerball, Man of the House, Son of the Mask, Seventh Son, Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, Vampire Academy, and Dougal. So that's the company that it's keeping. It also didn't help. Now, have you heard about this, Jim? This the director, Alex Proyas, went after film critics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, he blasted on Facebook. He blasted film critics for what he calls small-minded and vicious attacks on his film. The only critic he considers, quote-unquote, not bad is Roger Ebert, who famously named Dark City the best film of 1998. He also gave Knowing 4 stars.
Yeah.
And since The Crow and Dark City, Croyas has not received a fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and Gods of Egypt is by far his worst-reviewed film, and it showed up at the box office. Deadpool, $31 million, bringing its total up to $285 million. Boy, Jim, you and I and my friend Mike, I guess we saw a different movie than everybody else.
Apparently. Everyone I talked to loves it, and I'm like, really?
Yeah. I know, man. I don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Yeah. Number two, the movie we were just talking about, Gods of Egypt, with $14 million. This can't feel well for the studio releasing London is Falling next week, which is yet another Gerard Butler action fest. Number three, Kung Fu Panda 3 with $9 million, bringing his total up to $128 million, which is far below the other Kung Fu Panda movies. Number four, Risen with $7 million, bringing its total up to $22.7 million. Number five, reviewed movie of Eddie the Eagle, $6.3 million, right on its tail, Triple Nine, with $6.1 million. I keep trying to I keep almost calling it Triple H just because I'm a wrestling fan. And but yeah, so 6.3 million for Eddie the Eagle, not that great, and 6.1 million for Triple Nine. They're both neck and neck, and also not a ton of money. How to Be Single made $5.1 million, bringing its total up to $39 million. The Witch made $5 million, bringing its total up to $16.6 million. Which of course, the movie didn't cost a whole lot. I mean, they did release it wide, but it didn't cost a whole lot, and it's basically breaking even now. It'll probably do much better when it comes out on DVD.
Definitely.
Race with $4.2 million, $13 million in 2 weeks. That's not good.
Mm.
And then The Revenant with $3.8 million, bringing its total up to $170 million, and that made that kind of money this weekend, obviously, because people wanted to see it before the Academy Awards. And this is the first week, Jim, since it was released, that Star Wars was not in the top 10.
Wow. Yeah. I can't believe it happened.
It's the first week since Star Wars released that was not in your top 10 of the week. Some of the other stories, Jesus versus Satan thing that went off last week with Risen and the Witch. The Risen held fairly well. The Witch dropped hugely, which we predicted.
Of course.
You know, I mean, the audience that I saw it with was just not pleased with what they were
watching. It's sort of getting a similar reaction that the Blair Witch Project had, where a lot of people are walking out of it just angry. Like,
yeah.
Really? That was it?
Yeah. I love both of those movies. I think
yeah, me too.
I think they're both great. So I think that Deadpool, which has been number one now for 3 weeks, is going to drop off because we've got Zootopia coming out, and that I think will be the number one movie of the week.
Oh, definitely.
Would you agree with that, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it looks good, and I'm hearing good things about it.
Yeah, I'm hearing good things about it too, and I hope it's good. I really am. I'm looking forward to it. So, well, there you go. So, Deadpool again cleaning up at the box office, doing amazing business. It is, at this point, the highest-grossing R-rated movie of all time. And worldwide, I can't, it's made a ton of money, and it's already made almost $290 million just in America alone. So that's your box office. And if you want to take the breakdown here, you can go to movies.com if you want to read all of the details and stuff from Eric Childress, who writes about box office for movies.com. And so there you go. All right, listen, Jim, I want to thank you very, very much for filling in for Colin. You did a great job. And it was
that means so much coming from you.
It was a blast having you on, and I really appreciate you volunteering to do it and doing such a great job. And I hope you had fun doing it, man.
It's been an absolute pleasure filling in. And even if not all the movies these past 2 months were great,
yeah,
talking with you and Eric is always a great time for me.
Well, so, I think you and I can probably agree that one of my favorite movies so far this year, which is probably going to end up on my list at the end of the year, is The Witch, and we got to review that together. So,
yeah, it was worth it.
Okay, cool. So Zootopia,
all right, man.
London Has Fallen, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, The Other Side of the Door, and Knight of Cups. Those are the ones that we'll review next week. Colin will make his return. And we also, I don't know if you know this or not, Jim, but Colin and Eric and I, and if you want to join us, we would love to have you. Friday evening, we're going to go to the Music Box to see Interstellar in 70.
I'm on board for that 100%.
Okay, cool. We'll get in touch on that. But that's what it's Interstellar at 7 and then Starman at 11:30.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So
I'm still not a night owl these days.
I know.
It's going to be hard for me to stay up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I may, because they're showing Starman again some other time. That's in
70s. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But that's a lot of time in between. I mean, Interstellar is going to end around 10 to 10, quarter to 10. And then the next one is at 11:30. And I'm like, I can't,
Yeah, I don't think I can do that.
No. I mean, if I were still a drinking man, I would have just gone over, next door to Cullen's and had a bunch of cocktails before Starman, but I don't do that anymore, so I'm just probably just going to go home. But we are definitely going to Interstellar for sure cool. 70 millimeter. All right. And again, thanks a lot, Jim. Okay, buddy.
Okay.
Take care.
Take care.
There's Jim Laskowski, and we want to thank him for filling in. NowPlayingNetwork.net. NowPlayingNetwork.net for a variety of really great podcasts that are pop culture related. And Jim is a really good guy, and we thank him for filling in for Colin. Colin will be back next week, and also Eric will be back next week on our regular morning on Monday. All right. We're going to take a break. We come back. I'll tell you what I thought of the Oscars. We'll play some clips, and we'll talk about George Kennedy as well on this Tuesday morning.